This is us learning in public, trying to...
Literally learning in public.
Yeah.
We're at Vancouver Public Library. Yes. There are glass doors. Yes. We're literally learning in public.
Pulling back the curtain of silence.
And learning what freedom feels like. I'm Nick.
And I'm Lala. This is Seen. Brown-eyed activism.
Healing at the intersections.
So here we are. It's 2020.
Boom, a new decade.
Beginning of a new year, beginning of a new decade. Ah. Pretty huge. But instead of feeling hopeful and excited, a lot of us are feeling dread.
Yes.
With Australia burning and the threat of a new war looming, it feels like climate change and the political climate of the world are becoming increasingly impossible to ignore.
Absolutely.
And that's despite a lot of people's best efforts, because none of this stuff is new, really. Like, we might see new manifestations on the surface, but climate change and imperialism and the rise of populism and the far right, these are all things that have been...
just bubbling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people still haven't looked at them, despite them being in plain sight. And I'd argue that most of us are still in denial, because if we really understood what we're facing, we wouldn't be living as if it's business as usual. So I want us to talk about moving beyond denial.
Ooh.
What we're thinking and feeling as we wake up to the realities of what's happening, and how we want to move forward in this potentially apocalyptic moment. And I want us to take our time and stay grounded as we move through this sometimes overwhelming topic.
Yeah, especially when we have, I don't know, there's something about going into a new decade that sets like, okay, but from now until 2030, like, what can we... you know, what's this all going to look like? And when you have the beginning of a new decade kicked off with something so tragic and horrific as what's been taking place in Iran.
And Australia.
Yeah. I would even argue or add the fact that we're spending so much of our time and energy, like, as society talking about Megxit. And people are so, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but, like, we're having conversations, I'm thinking more along the lines of, like, why is everybody so pressed about this whole monarchy thing? Like, it doesn't do good for anybody.
Yeah.
Like, we're thinking, people are thinking a lot more about, like, wow, can he just leave, like, the family? Like, what does that mean? Do we all become, like, unglued when that happens? Not necessarily, but, like, I think we're just all kind of talking about these things in a new way. Or we have to talk about these things.
We should be,
way.
Which is why I say, yeah. Arguably, most of us are still in denial, because would we be talking about that if we were really awake to what's happening?
Yeah,
and the real ramifications of it.
Right.
I think we would realize, if we weren't in denial, how irrelevant that is.
Yes.
So before recording this episode, I asked you to listen to an episode of the podcast The Future is Beautiful, where Amisha Gadiali spoke to Jem Bendel about deep adaptation, climate change, and societal collapse. So what was it like for you to listen to that conversation?
It was deeply emotional.
Yeah.
Which I didn't, you know, the title of the podcast, which I had not heard of before, I was thinking, like, okay, it's going to make me feel feelings. I kind of assumed that. And having spent 4 months working in Environment Canada in the climate change directorate, and working with people who were working on adaptation, like, I was working on climate change mitigation stuff, specifically with this idea of, like, a gender-based analysis, thinking about, like, how can we apply this, like, a feminist lens to thinking about climate change.
When was this?
This,
like, what
was
year?
In 20 when Trump just got elected.
2016.
Yeah. So I was, and so anyways, like, knowing people who are so deeply connected to this type of work, I guess it just really made me realize how their connection to it was emotional. And I could glean that from I'm thinking about two people specifically, one woman who's actually an artist now, and she does climate change adaptation, like, art.
Mm.
It's really beautiful. But she was so deeply connected to it. And I was like, I get it. Yeah. But then listening to this podcast, it really affirmed and made it kind of come full circle to me, like, why this is so deeply emotional and human, because adaptation in and of itself requires us to do something differently.
Yes.
And I think it made me realize how there's so much more room for reflection and acting different in my own personal life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I liked that their conversation, I think, it kind of captured that combination between, or that meeting of the emotional and the political that we try to do.
Yeah.
Because you know, I think this is a really important part of the issue that gets overlooked in a lot of circles, is that there are reasons why people are so in denial. And
yeah.
It's, you know, it's not just that people are stupid or people are ignorant or something like that.
Yeah.
Some people might be ignorant or not paying attention, but I think the much bigger problem is that to actually face these realities, it's terrifying. And there's so much grief. It's a lot to try to be with emotionally.
Yeah. And I think in the podcast episode, they created an environment where we're able to think about both the scientific and analytical and the factual, in addition to the heartfelt, emotional, intuitive, feeling related stuff. Like, I really thought it was interesting listening to Jem, as that was his name, mm-hmm. was him talking about how he's now approaching his work so differently. Like, he's thinking about what is meaningful to him.
Yeah.
And I think that piece really stuck with me, and I really appreciated especially the fact that it wasn't, they made it a point to not dwell on the dread and dwell on the terrifying, even though you have to accept those things. You have to accept that, like, so much of what we're scared of is like just a complete loss, like loss of like our futures, what we imagined ourselves to do. That,
exactly.
You know, talking about, you know, this realization that like we might not, we probably won't get the opportunity to grow old. Like,
well, yeah, that we, yeah, that certainly not in the way that we imagine.
Not in the way that we imagine, not the way that our parents have always wanted us to, not in the ways that we imagine.
And I think especially growing up in Canada at the time that we did, being settlers, we experienced being in a region belonging to groups where there's a relative, like, peace and prosperity and stability,
mm-hmm.
and expansion and growth.
Yeah.
That really, if you kind of zoom out and you look at other groups, including, you know, some Indigenous communities in Canada, look at other parts of the world, it's just, look at history, it's just not the norm.
Yeah.
Right?
We've been living in this, like, wholesale bliss bubble. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's being completely shattered.
Yeah.
Of course. And I think it's important, too, like you were saying, we might not get to grow old. And I feel like people try to say either, oh, well, somehow pull it together and we'll be able to continue our way of life, but somehow in a green way where everything's fine.
Right.
Everything's fine for whom is another question you might
ask.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
But
good follow-up question.
Then the other one being sort of sudden death or the world just sort of like completely disappearing.
Yeah.
And then I think there is the more complicated process of climate change that becomes, you know, it's not we're gone, but our entire world changes. The systems that we know collapse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that was something the podcast, I listened to it for the first time about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing him say, you know, if we have another couple of summers, like the summer of 2018.
They're talking about like how hot it was, and it was about grain.
Droughts. That we'll start to see mass starvations, including in the West.
Absolutely.
So that goes from the next 30 years, which I think is what a lot of people kind of talk about. And 30 years is an amount of time that if you really think about it, you realize that's not that long. But then at the same time, it's kind of farther than you can really imagine in your own life. Like, where am I going to be 30 years from now? Who knows?
Exactly.
So there's a distance from that.
Yeah.
And then you hear a couple more summers
of the same weather that we've been experiencing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you start to see Australia again, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want this podcast to be us trying to prove a case for, you know, this is really happening.
Because we know it's happening. Yeah.
Shake people out of denial,
yeah.
or, you know, anything like
Absolutely.
That. I don't think we're the right people to do that. We're not scientists.
Sorry.
But I think I was wanting to touch on even one specific there, just because I think it is important to get a taste and not just be speaking in the abstract about fear, but actually to say some of the things that bring up the fear.
Yeah.
and like bring us closer to that reality.
Yeah. The more that we can identify the things we're fearful of, the more we can actually make space for what we care about. And, you know,
that's the thing. It's like the idea that the only way out is through.
Yeah.
We actually need to feel this fear now and feel the grief of, you know, maybe my career plans of what I wanted to do in the next 20 years, I need to completely rethink, and I probably it's not going to look the way I thought it was. Mm-hmm. Or if I want to have children, I need to think about what that might mean.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things. Mm-hmm. And even right now, you know, like they talked about in that episode, maybe you decide not to work late every night
and you just have to go home to your family. Yeah.
Right.
And maybe you find different ways to connect with people that are around you. It's just like, I found that to be a really great accessible way to talk about things, because it's really focusing on, so what can you do to make meaning now if all these things are going to happen?
Exactly. You know? And then another piece I want to pull in, very related. It's an article called What If We Stopped Pretending by Jonathan Franzen. And he says, you can keep on hoping the catastrophe is preventable and feel ever more frustrated or enraged by the world's inaction, or you can accept that disaster is coming and begin to rethink what it means to have hope.
Hmm.
And I think that's really important, because the fact is we can't actually prevent climate catastrophe at this point. Even at best, we'll have to radically change our ways of life very soon.
Yeah.
And we're actually finding that scientists have underestimated the speed and severity of mm-hmm. climate change. So these things about how are we going to get our food, and is there enough for everybody, and just on the sort of material level, that disaster is coming. Mm-hmm. And then we need to think about how humans are likely to respond.
Yes.
Because we're seeing this rise of populism in the far right already. Yep. And that those types of political climate ideologies, when there's hard times, they deal with it with brutal repression and austerity. Scapegoating
yes.
minorities.
Absolutely.
And atrocities happen.
Yeah.
And we're already seeing people wanting to hold on even tighter to what they personally have. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not mm-hmm. like people aren't jumping to share more and to pay more in taxes to avert this. Like, I don't know if you heard this study where it was nearly 2/3 of Canadians see fighting climate change as a top priority, but half of those surveyed wouldn't shell out more than $100 per year in taxes to prevent climate change.
Wow.
Which is the equivalent of less than $9 a month.
Wow.
So again, we're facing these disasters, but I think this is another reason we need to deal with our fear head on, because a lot of people are dealing with fear by trying to hold tighter to what they as individuals have.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that's not going to save you.
Yeah. It's going to affect us all.
It's going to affect us all. And it's all, I mean, it's also not okay. Like, even if you could hold on to what you have, and then there's like just mass starvation outside of your backyard, that's not okay either.
Yeah.
But also, people need to understand that's not going to save you.
Yeah.
So
we're going to get into this.
Yeah. Well, we're already.
We're into it.
Yeah.
I'm like swimming in a deep end and I don't know how to swim. And like I said, yesterday,
you're like, I need to learn how to swim. Yeah, literally.
So and you're like, why? I'm like, a bitch isn't trying to drown in the apocalypse. Like, I need to learn. That seems like it's an important skill.
Yeah. Seems like an important skill. I mean, I guess I technically can swim, so it wasn't the first thing that came to my mind. But mm-hmm.
I mean, I could also learn how to
skills,
like grow things.
Yes.
Forage.
Yeah.
Hunting, I got Nolan for that.
Yeah, you have,
you know,
a,
I'm
you
really
have a partner with some good survival skills.
Yes, exactly.
That's something anyways. Yeah.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community and we cannot do this without you.
So let's come back to this question from Jonathan Franzen's article. Let's rethink, what does it mean to have hope in this context?
Oh, man.
So if we can't hope that just none of this will happen and we'll just continue our way of life, then what could we hope for?
Oh, I don't even know where to start. I think for me personally, I've started to really feel this need for connection with people in my community, outside of my friend groups, people who share similar identities, people who share similar values or visions, or just we're all Black women and non-binary folks creating things in the city. And I feel hopeful for relationships and relations, because I think, like, in my, for me personally, those are the only things that really matter to me. Like, recently I've started to realize, like, I don't need any more money, really. Like, it'd be nice to do a lot of things. It'd be nice to save more money and pay down my debt sooner and, like, have a, you know, own, like, quote unquote, like, own something or whatever, like, have an asset. But then I'm, in, if I'm being honest, I know that my life is great. Like, currently it's fine. So what else would I need? In my mind, the only real place for me to find hope is in banding with other people and investing my time and energy into people.
Yeah.
I don't know. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, similar. I think the two main things that I came up with are hope that we can adapt. And again, not like, I hope there's as little disruption to my way of life as possible, because that's not possible. But hoping that we, with sort of the death that climate change represents, you know, the death of a lot of systems, the death of ways of life.
Yeah.
Systems that have needed to fall for a long time.
Yeah.
That with that death, there can be a rebirth and there can be a completely different way of being, way of living. And the other hope being that we'll take care of each other.
And yeah.
I think that's the real key. And so when you're talking about spending time with people, it's like, I think there's more than one reason for that. And one is, I do think that that connection with other people is what can give you meaning in any circumstance.
Absolutely.
No matter what's going on, I think connection makes things better.
Yeah.
And gives you a reason to exist, even when things are really hard.
Yeah.
And because we need each other.
Yes.
We have to take care of each other, because we're not going to be able to just throw money at our problems and sit in our, like, nice houses and just
ignore things that are outside of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the difficult thing is trying to convince people around you that we are each other's business, and that we, like, you know, like, how do you make people who supposedly care, like that statistic you said about, like, how many Canadians that want to, that believe climate change is a real imminent thing, but, like, wouldn't give any more than, like, $100 a year. How do you change the way that people are even orienting themselves to this reality, that it's not somebody else's reality, it's going to be our reality, or it is our reality, or even if it's not affecting us, like me and you right now, that we should care just as much if it's affecting anybody, no matter where they are. And I don't, I think that's the part where the hope feels difficult, because you, I see this especially in the way that the world is quote unquote divisive in politics or whatever, where people are like, people who are committed to not only misunderstanding the most marginalized folks, but, like, actively, punitively, harmfully punishing them for existing, don't want to change their ways. Like, that's not on the table for them. So it's like, you already have so many of us who are so invested in trying to say, hey, look at this harm that's happening to people. And so many folks who were, like, eager to ignore it altogether, that I think it just makes you realize, it makes me realize that there's lots of stuff that we can't control, but what we can control is how we choose to engage with one another. Like, I can't make somebody who doesn't believe that, you know, people who are living on the street don't deserve this because they just didn't seem to work hard enough, but I can treat that person who works, who lives on the street, with the amount of love and care and compassion at every interaction that I have with them as I can.
Yeah.
You know, it makes me feel like I just got to work on myself.
I mean, especially living in cities and like big country is like, we're just so kind of isolated from each other. Mm-hmm. And we're so, you know, on city streets, it's like you don't really look at the people around you. You just are sort of like in your own little bubble and you don't see yourself as part of a community with all the people who are like immediately around you. Mm-hmm. But I'm remembering I read a book in undergrad, so like 10 or 11 years ago, called something to the effect of Why Your World Is About to Get a Whole Lot Smaller. Hmm. And it was talking about sort of the reverse of globalization that was going to happen because of climate change, where, you know, you can no longer just ship your food in from across the world. So you need to eat what grows in your backyard. Exactly. When I start to think about, I've been reading more like Indigenous futurism novels and Afrofuturist novels, and you start to kind of think about, okay, well, what would happen then? So the power goes out, or, you know, you're cut off from, you know, the governments that are helping you, and things mm-hmm. get really small, right? Mm-hmm. And what's happening in your immediate surroundings,
yeah,
that becomes everything. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a way of being in community that most of us don't have right now. But yeah. I think this is the kind of thing that we need to be building.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's so much opportunity for that because, I don't know, I think in many ways, and I always talk about this as one of the things that detract from like social media, for example, where it's like I feel like I've spent so much time in community with folks online who are teaching me so much, and I'm learning so much, and we're sharing so much, and there's so much distance between us. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't change how close we can be because we get to, you know, we're on Instant Messenger together. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say that like that's globalism necessarily, but I think it's just interesting to reflect on what it means to be present with the people that are actually around mm-hmm. you, because like that's what is going to be the people that you need to rely on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, yeah, I don't know how you feel about that, but it's just interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so all of this, as we look to the future, it has to be Indigenous led. Mm-hmm. Right. Like that's first of all, I mean, that's what's right. We are on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations.
Yes.
So they're rightful leaders of what happens here.
Yeah.
And it's Indigenous nations here, and I imagine around the world as well, who actually know how to live as responsible and healthy members of the local ecosystems. Mm-hmm. Being led by the land, that's something I've heard Leanne Simpson, for example, talk about. Mm-hmm. So nature moves to balance itself, right? So we need to be following the direction of nature, and then the people who have been stewards of the land that we're on since time immemorial.
Yeah.
That's where all the solutions really should be coming from, if we could let go of, again,
the systems,
the colonial idea of Canada and our, you know, rights as Canadians.
Yeah.
And that we think we should get to lead the way mm-hmm. when we're kind of forgetting
yes
what has actually happened here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's collapse happening, and then what? There's still this chance to move forward. So there's a lot of people doing work about how do we move forward. And Adrienne Marie Brown is a great example of that. She has this book, Emergent Strategy, that's really inspiring and gives a lot of tools and resources for how to work in communities and find ways forward and make communities really work. Like, what would transformative justice actually look like in a community? And this idea of, you know, let's look to nature and see how nature moves forward when death happens.
Yeah.
So a lot of this work's being done. And then again, Jem Bendel, he has this idea of deep adaptation.
Yes.
And so it's not just, again, like, let's try to go about business as usual and just recycle more, but really transforming our systems or transforming what it means for us to even be alive.
Yeah.
So there's three ideas that I think, and I think these are really important. So we know the difference when a government is, or a, you know, political candidate or a community leader is proposing sort of a band-aid, or if they're proposing real change.
Yes.
And then I think also it's just helpful for us as individuals, because again, like, our lives are going to be deeply transformed. So we need to deeply adapt too, mm-hmm. just to like be okay, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, totally.
So he has these...
Are they the three R's that he yes. talked about? Yes. Okay, cool.
So there's resilience, and that's adapting well to trauma and adversity. So, you know, doing healing work for all of the loss that's coming.
And even confronting your fears about the loss to build that resilience, you know
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly, like, totally. Yeah. Reimagining our priorities. So mm-hmm. maybe, okay, I'm losing this job, or I'm losing, you know, my retirement plan.
Yeah.
But I still have my family,
yeah.
for example.
Right.
And this is the other thing, too. I think because of the sort of privilege bubble that a lot of us, you know, settlers in Canada have gotten used to, I think there's a lot of fear in the sort of idea that there's no possible way to live without this level of immense privilege.
Yeah. It's going to devastate us if we have that mindset, I think. You know,
yeah.
it's like, and I hate people always like, I went to Africa and I saw these people that live so simply and they're so happy. But it's like, there are many ways to live. There are
yes.
many ways to exist. And
yeah.
I think that we have just gotten so accustomed to, myself included,
yeah.
like to, yeah, like you said, like a level of comfort and privilege, and even the audacity of like, imagining that we get to live so long, like, not mm-hmm. everybody has that to start. So mm-hmm. I think it is helpful to, I'm going to say, like, manage your expectations about what we're quote unquote owed in this life, or
totally.
What we're owed in this world, or like what, you know, hard work gets you, or things like that that we always talk about, you know, that
yeah.
the whole like pick yourself up from your bootstraps sort of thing isn't helpful, but like it truly won't be helpful. It truly all the degrees and all of the
yeah.
things that we're, so I think like, yeah, the resilience part is equal parts like building your propensity to like handle the trauma, and then it's also like that mental fortitude, I think,
yeah.
too, to like wrap your head around all the different ways that people currently exist and survive, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was talking to a friend with a migration background, and, you know, her mom lived through a revolution and a war and, you know, being on rations and all those kinds of things. And it's not to take away from the hardship of that. There's
not at
so
all.
Much more loss and death and terror in those things.
Yeah.
But again, people can and do and have survived. So I think that's, again, what does hope look like in this context?
Yeah.
We can survive.
Yeah.
And we need to, like you said, manage our expectations of what does survival look like?
Yeah. Because
survival doesn't necessarily look like being
thriving.
In a luxury apartment
yes.
and having your, like, shopping sprees and yoga passes and,
yes.
like, weekend getaways. And,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Like, those are nice things, but, like,
it's not what
you
life
know,
is
that's
really
not,
about.
That's not all.
Yeah.
You know?
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
It would be nice if we could all just.
Yeah. Like,
do
literally
that.
All of us. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the second one is relinquishment, which is letting go of the things that aren't serving us anymore.
Mm.
And that includes behaviors, beliefs, systems, all of the things that got us into this mess. I think a lot of us, myself included, need to really look at our values and priorities. And this is something that people who have a terminal illness, for example, might have to look at.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now I'm dealing with the reality of my mortality. So what's really important to me? A lot of people have all kinds of sort of life transformations around that.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, we're not waiting for a diagnosis anymore, you know?
Yeah.
To go through that process.
Mm-hmm. I think you even mentioning that, it kind of reminds me of what you had said earlier, that like people are already doing a lot of this work. All the things that we're talking about, considering, there's a lot already that's being done.
Yeah.
Like we have like, there's death doulas that exist to
yes.
help people like transition.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's so much that we can glean from folks
yeah.
and their work
yeah.
that might not even be necessarily related to like this imminent feeling apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And that was, you know, and then that's on an individual level. There's, again, the systems that we're going to have to dismantle.
Right.
Or that will just collapse. And then we're going to have to rebuild. So there's a lot of, again, loss. And a lot of that loss is, these are systems that should fall, that we've wanted to fall.
Yeah.
It's just there's a lot of grief and terror when it actually happens, because it's still, it's something new. It's an ending. It's a new beginning. It's a lot to manage.
And even still, like, the fall of capitalism that is imminent, it's got to happen at some point. It's like, me and you and everybody probably listening has, like, subscribed to capitalism in some way, shape, or form. Like, we go to work. We, like, earn a paycheck. Like, we have aspirations and goals about finances. And I think that's part of, like, the letting go. But it's just asking us to really confirm within our hearts, like, what is important, truly important.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's restoration, which is returning to ways of being and doing that we've lost touch with, that we're going to need in order to get through this. And, you know, I wish I'd written down the author before this, because I just read a novel, Moon of the Crested Snow, which I think was a really beautiful example of this, of how it's an Indigenous author as well. Mm. And again, an apocalypse, it's a death, it's an ending, but there can still be a rebirth.
Right.
So I think restoration, this is another, again, another example of why this should all be Indigenous led.
Mm-hmm.
Because there were ways of living on this land that we're on that were not leading us to this moment. So there's a lot of knowledge that already exists.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to go back to.
And the appropriative ways that we have taken from Indigenous cultures and like, in many ways, whitewashed and commodified,
mm-hmm.
like, that's going to have to go too. Like, we're going to have to return to something that a lot of us have never even known before.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's not going to be like you going to, you know, the kitschy grocery store on the corner and buying, like, sage. I don't think what it's going to look like.
Yes, no.
Just want to, in the spirit of managing expectations, you know.
Yes, like, 100%.
Deep adaptation.
Yes. So do you have thoughts about what are next steps for you? And again, it's not about like, okay, so what are the answers to this? But like, we just had this conversation. What do you think are like the very next steps for you?
I think having more conversations with my family is a big thing for me. Because it can be really isolating to be sort of in this state of dread and fear all by yourself. So I think part of me just wants to share that with others.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I would love to be more reflective of like where the things that I have as benchmarks of success in my life, whether those things are truly in and of myself or whether they're actually coming from other, not only like messages, but ways of being that I know don't necessarily align with things that are very valuable to me. Like, I think it's an opportunity to realign or revisit what my, not my values are, but my values are in conjunction with my goals.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, listening to the podcast, I was listening to it yesterday and then I finished it on the way into work this morning. And I honestly just wanted to cry a little bit. Like,
mm-hmm.
it makes me feel really sad to think that I might, you know, Nolan and I always talk about wanting to have kids. Like, it's really scary and sad because mm-hmm. there's this deep desire to bring forth life that I feel like I have. And it's a scary feeling to know that, like, that might not be the best thing for that baby or mm-hmm. that person. And it makes me worried. It makes me worried for my mom. It makes me worried for my sisters. It makes me just, like, you know, I have a sense of panic almost. But, yeah, I think it really just requires me to sit and then go and have conversations and just spend time with people. It's always been important for me, but it's so much more important now than ever to be connected to people,
mm-hmm.
like really connected to people in ways that are, that feel meaningful. How about for you?
Yeah, I think really thinking about those priorities and prioritizing spending time with people and even taking care of my health, taking care of the people around me, figuring out what my priorities really are, and reading for me. I feel like I really, there's a lot of people that I really want to engage more deeply with their work. Like, As We Have Always Done by Leanne Simpson is next on my list.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people who are doing work that really is nourishing and inspiring. And it's what hope looks like for me in this context. And I really want to dive deeper into that.
Yeah.
We'll then keep having episodes where we keep talking about
this.
This and the deeper we dive into ideas for how to move forward in our communities.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Please share book ideas. And by book, I mean hardcover real books, not Kindle books.
You know what? E-books.
Lala's a selfish person. Ah, you know what? Save the earth. Less waste. You're totally right. Fuck.
Books are something.
You got me on this episode. I can't just be like...
hold.
digression.
Yes. So I actually, for Woman of Color of the Week, I want to feature a Métis novelist. Named Cherie Demoline. She has written several novels, including the absolute masterpiece Empire of Wild, which came out last year, and it's one of the best novels I've ever read in life. It's so good.
Ooh.
I just can't say enough about it. But I wanted to feature her because of another book she wrote called The Marrow Thieves. Mm-hmm. And again, I think Afro and Indigenous futurisms are absolutely essential for us in this moment, where we're being called to imagine ways forward in this apocalyptic time. Mm-hmm. We need our imaginations both to dream new possibilities for humanity that are so much better than we have now and to avoid the nightmarish possibilities. And I won't lie, I found the Marrow Thieves disturbing. It takes place in Canada in a dystopian, not too distant future where, along with some of the systems collapses that we're anticipating, in the book, non-Indigenous people have lost the ability to dream.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And that's mortifying.
Yeah. And that leads them, or I should say us, to hunt Indigenous people in an attempt to extract the ability to dream. So the residential school system's resurrected in a somehow even more horrific scenario.
Whoa.
I'm highlighting this work for a couple of reasons. And one is that, again, I think it's really important to read stories that involve people adapting and surviving in the dystopian future that we're anticipating, because apocalypse is an ending and it can be a beginning. And I also specifically think that we all need to think really carefully about who we're going to be when things really start happening.
Thank you.
So if there are massive food and water shortages and natural disasters are happening and some people get to be transported somewhere more safe with access to food and water and others are left behind, if you're one of those lucky people, are you just going to go along with that? Or if some people are being rounded up and taken away, are you going to do something about that?
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who was born a settler here, I think, you know, we inherit a system and most of us are very removed from how we're already answering those questions every day.
Yeah.
With our inaction. And I think books like The Marrow Thieves put that more into focus, which is really desperately needed in this moment. And Cherie wrote this as a young adult book specifically because she wanted to empower youth to take charge and feel like they can make decisions and they can change how this goes.
Mm-hmm.
So please read The Marrow Thieves if you haven't already, and also do yourself a favor and read everything else she's written because she's absolutely breathtaking as a writer. So thank you, Cherie, for your brilliance.